Hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 8 of the Command Cinema podcast. My name is Drew.
I'm Malachi.
And I'm Cody.
And today we are going to be talking about the third part of the Godfather trilogy.
Can you call it the trilogy, though?
We're going to talk about the epilogue to the Godfather the two Godfather movies. I don't know. I don't see this as like a real part 3, but... yeah, okay. So anyway, today we're going to be talking about Godfather Part 3, and we have a lot of thoughts about it, but before we get into it, how's everybody doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing really good. Yeah, it's been kind of a slow week, but saw some good movies, and hunting for a job.
What have you seen?
What have I seen? I watched Airplane today.
For the first time?
For the first time, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I watched Walkabout by Nick Rogue. Oh, God, what else have I seen? I rewatched WALL-E. Haven't seen that in like 15 years. I don't know. I took like a break of watching movies for about a week, and now I saw like 10 things within the past week, so... Those were my favorites, though. I really recommend Walkabout. That was a really cool movie. But what have y'all seen?
Cody, have you seen anything?
Well, no. I did screen, I will say. So I have these friends that have never seen Pulp Fiction. And so I screened that here at the studio on the projector, and they thoroughly enjoyed it. Which, you know, it is a very well-perceived film, rightfully so, because... God, I just every time I watch it, I catch something new. But yeah, that's what I did. I did that last night, I think. And they thoroughly enjoyed it. They're like, wait, is John Travolta dead or is he alive?
You know, ooh, like, spoiler. I still haven't seen
it. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. What? I'm so sorry.
Old. Come on, man.
Yeah, I know. I know it's so old. A lot of the Godfather is old and we had never seen any of them.
I know, but Pulp Fiction's like a staple.
I know. Also, The Godfather is also a staple, but
we can talk about.
Yeah, but there's a lot more commitment with like over 9 hours of film versus like 2-3 hours. So
it's not my fault. You guys didn't put this on the pod. I'm sorry. I'll watch Pulp Fiction soon. But in my case, what have I seen recently? Well, I got the chance to go to a drive-in, so that was really interesting.
Fun. I'm jealous.
It got to. It like made me feel like I was, you know, back in the theater. It was really nice. And there we got to watch. The movie selection was not that great. The first movie we watched was Valley Girl, which is pretty much like a modern day 80s song and dance movie. And it had Logan Paul in it, of all people.
We love Paul.
Logan, full effect. And the other movie we watched was How to Build a Girl with Beanie Feldstein. And I really like her as an actor, but I feel like she always plays the same character. So I feel like if you like her as that character, you'll probably think this movie's okay. I still think that Booksmart's probably better.
Mm.
I haven't seen Booksmart. Lady Bird, though.
I can't speak on that movie. Not positive.
Hey, what do you mean you can't speak on it?
I just don't like Lady Bird. I'm of the camp that likes all the other movies that are exactly like it, like Edge of 17 or 8th Grade. Like
a perfect coming of age movie.
I don't like it. I'm sorry. All love to Saoirse Ronan, but
we can just wrap it up here. That's fine. We'll call it a day.
Thankfully, we're not here to talk about Lady Bird. We're here to talk about a movie that's probably equally as bad in my eyes.
Oh my God! Come on, man.
I'm kidding. We're here to talk about The Godfather Part 3. And like every other episode, we always get Cody's first opinion on it. So, Cody.
No pressure. So, if you haven't listened to the previous two podcasts on Godfather Part 1 and 2, you may know that I have not seen Part 3. And maybe rightfully so, after watching it, I had, you know... I've been a fan of the first two for a couple of years now, and I actually thoroughly enjoyed both of them and then was told to stay away from the third one. And last night and part of today, I watched it, and it may have been I use this a lot as an excuse, but it may have been the way I watched it, like, from my iPad, which I hate to watch movies on my iPad, but I had no other choice. And I don't know. I felt the continuity between the first two and this one as far as not – one thing I will say right off the bat, I will respect Francis for not making it feel like a seamless gap. But in efforts of doing so, he could have automatically came out the gate with Michael, you know, still holding that Godfather, you know, as far as, like, being right in your face, in the chair, you know, maybe with Kat or something like that. It felt similar because, you know, there was a long – the setting was, like, what, 30 to 40 minutes in that one setting? But it kind of, like, the same setup in the first one with the wedding. You know, you felt that fellowship between all the characters and you – and it's a great way to, you know, establish character development between, you know, not but just the way they interact with people, mm-hmm. you know, in such a high-paced scenario. So for that, I appreciated that, and it didn't feel overbearing. But as far as the whole movie, I have problems with it, and I'll get into that later. What about you guys?
You know, I watched it the other night. And first impressions, it's not as bad as everyone says it is.
Right.
It's not the worst movie ever made. It's totally watchable, but Francis Ford Coppola totally sold out and made a really subpar third part of this trilogy. And I like, there's a little bit of trivia where Coppola kind of knew what he was getting into with this, and he was only given, I think, a year to write the whole script, direct, and produce the movie, which is a very, very, very quick turnaround. And the reason that he signed on to do this in the first place is because Coppola had, like, a really rough 80s, and he was having trouble getting financing at all. So Paramount stepped in. They're like, hey, if you want to do a third part to, you know, this franchise that has made a ton of money, you know, we'll finance you on that. And he didn't even want to call it part three. It was originally, like, The Death of Michael Corleone, which I think is a much better title. And, you know, even Coppola kind of views it as an epilogue. But yeah, first impressions, you know, it's not terrible. It's a watchable movie if you don't take it too seriously. And I mean, it's pretty easy to follow.
That's ironic, though you mentioned that. I did not know that he did not make the third one. I would assume so after not making the second one. He did. I mentioned that in the last podcast that Coppola actually didn't care for making the second part, but was convinced otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted Scorsese to do the second part, and mm-hmm. I can't even imagine how that would have turned out.
Yeah, I wish that was a real thing, maybe. Or maybe I don't. I don't know. I can't compare part two.
Yeah, and plus, this came out in 1990, like the same year that Goodfellas came out.
Yeah, so we couldn't have had that. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Malachi, what do you think about the movie?
I think Francis said, "Put money in my hand, please, and I will make something for you." I can't say it'll be good, but it'll be something. The movie is just strange. Like, a lot of the characters just seem, like, really, like, they're making actions and they're saying things that I don't feel like the other two movies has, like, portrayed them to think that way. Like, there's, like, a couple of scenes in the movie where, like, Connie and Michael are talking, and they seem like completely different people than they did in the first two movies.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
And I thought that was really strange. Like, every... Like, how long is this movie set after the second one?
Because I think Fredo, the hit that was put out on Fredo, that happened, like, the early 60s. And this one takes place in, like, it starts in 75. So I think it's 15.
Gotcha. I guess I definitely wasn't looking at I always forget to look at the year on the screen whenever it pops up. Like, it's just... Yeah, but this one's just odd. Like, I just feel like there was a lot of different things that happened. Like, you were just like, why? Like, that's so uncharacteristic. And people are making, like, very drastic, really heavy-handed things seem like they're so normal. like the one scene with the helicopter.
Jesus, over the top.
But I got a lot of things to say.
We can start out with, I like that you brought up the character motivations, like with Connie and Michael, because it really doesn't feel like they're Connie and Michael. I don't think Michael, I mean, I know that he's supposed to be in his old age and like reflecting on everything in this movie, but I don't think he would, the Michael that's in 2 would not regret, I just don't think he's like a regretful, like thoughtful person. I know this takes place like 15 years later, but still, he's, I don't know, it just, it didn't feel right. And he looks so different. Again, I know the sequel happened like, you know, plenty of years later, but still, like, it doesn't feel like Michael Corleone. It just feels like Al Pacino, like, hamming it up.
Hamming it up. That last scene was definitely hammed up. Oh, my God.
I would agree with that. Okay, her best acting was when she was dead.
Ooh,
honestly.
Lord.
Let's be honest. Let's
be a breathe.
Yeah, no, I agree.
When she was just laying, I mean, even when she dropped it, it wasn't convincing. I mean, this is why you don't work with family. This is why you don't do it. I mean, sometimes it works, but God, it is not. It did not. So it was not convincing one bit. And it was very distracting throughout the whole film.
I mean, from what I've read, they said that she got, like, she received so many, like, negative comments about her acting in this movie. She actually decided to not act anymore and start directing.
Well, that was a good call because she's made some pretty good movies.
Yeah, she's a great director, but like, oh my God. Anytime she was on screen, it was like nails on a chalkboard. Like, the first introduction where she's talking to Vincent and she's at the table and she's like, relatives always kiss. And she's like, got the lip, like, I don't know what she's trying to do. I don't know if she's trying to be sexy or cool. But like, none of that works. She just looks like creepy and kind of like nervous. And I kind of feel bad for her because you know that like doing this whole incest subplot with your dad behind like, you know, 20 feet away directing you and having to say shit like that is going to be awkward. So I do feel bad for her. But
how much money do you think Francis slid Sophia for having to do that?
Dude, not enough.
I'm going to seduce you and then tell you I'm your cousin.
God, ugh. I don't like that was a part of the movie, that it was such a big part.
Mm.
And none of it was convincing. It was so awkward. Like, the guy who plays Vincent, do y'all know off the top of your head?
I think it's Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia, okay. He is pretty good. I like anytime that Vincent's on screen. I feel like he kind of depicts the role of being like Sonny's bastard son pretty well. But the whole romance subplot is just like, God, it is a train wreck. And it's in the movie for a lot more than I thought it was going to be. I thought they were just going to like barely touch on it, but
it's like a focal point. It's like,
yeah, it's a big
one. I really don't understand. Like, where were Sonny's other children?
You know, I don't know.
Because
I really don't know.
Because, like, in the one scene of the second movie, whenever Michael's sitting at the table and they're celebrating Vito's birthday, you can hear, like, Sonny's kids saying, Dad and Michael Dad and Uncle Michael are fighting. So it was pretty obvious that he had other kids because Vincent says, my dad died before I met him. So where are the other kids? I just thought it was really weird that they're like, okay, yeah, we're only going to focus on Sonny's kid.
Honestly, they might be like in the wedding scene because I read that, you know, what's his name? Vincent is like, he's the son of like Sonny and the bridesmaid from the first movie. And apparently the actress, the bridesmaid, is like in this one. So maybe Sonny's kids are just in the background somewhere and they don't address it. Because they barely address her. So.
I don't know timeline-wise if it would be possible. Because, I mean, Vincent could only be how old? Like early 30s, late 20s? I would say mid to late 20s. I mean, honestly, there's no way. Unless I'm getting the whole timeline wrong, which I possibly could.
Well, it's very loosely defined. Like, it's very, it would not be an easy feat to be able to know how old all these people are, because it kind of just gives you a person. Oh, you're my cousin, and you kind of just, oh, well, okay. It seems wrong, so I'll just go with that.
I liked how they're like, okay, we're not gonna bring back Robert Duvall, and we can't bring James Caan in, so we're just gonna bring in their children.
I hate anytime that happens in a movie.
They did a great job casting Robert Duvall's son. That was kind of convincing.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just paid Robert Duvall enough money, and we would have signed on. He was in the original script. They just wouldn't pay him enough, so he
dipped.
He didn't do it.
He should have took an L, and so did it. I mean, in all honesty, it could have been a redeeming quality to the movie.
Yeah, but also, like, props to Robert Duvall.
But he probably made the best choice in that scenario for his career wise.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That was a super smart move. Whether or not he knew it at the time, that was a very smart move. I don't quite know what, because I don't know what he would have done in this movie, really. I mean, I know that he was in the original script, but his son just plays such a small role. It's like he's barely there. Maybe that's just what Duvall was supposed to do, is whatever his son does in this movie, but who's to say? Who knows?
I think he was just kind of there to kind of like further Michael's grasp on making the Corleone family like more legitimate. Because like, oh, he was going to be an important figure in like the Catholic Church, we'll say. And I guess I really don't know, because like they get to the point where they're talking about the Immobiliari part, and you're like, what does that even mean? What does that mean in the grand scheme of things? Like, is this just some almighty European company that Michael's trying to take over?
They say international Immobiliari so many times, and yet they never establish what it actually is. Like, I don't think any other phrase in that movie is used more than international Immobiliari, and I don't know what it is.
Was it surprising to anyone but myself that the phrase Michael says when he's in the kitchen, he says, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me right back in? I had no idea that was in this movie.
Yeah. What do y'all think of Pacino's performance in this movie? Because I know that's kind of like nobody's talking about Godfather Part 3 now, but back when the movie came out, that was kind of like a hotly debated thing. It's like, is this performance actually good, or is this kind of like Pacino going off the deep end? What are y'all's two cents on it?
I don't think it was a bad performance. It's Pacino, and not in the sense like, oh, it's Pacino, so it has to be good. It was, he read the dialogue, he read it well. He performed it well. I felt it when he screamed after his daughter was murdered in cold blood. Spoiler alert. Sorry. Should have blamed it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's like a 30-year-old movie. Okay.
But that was, I put myself in his shoes. Not that I could, because one, I don't have a daughter, and two, I've never seen someone murdered in cold blood like that. So to feel like he was in shock for a moment, and then he's like, oh my god, he was like, you could feel all the emotions rushing in at once, and then I don't know, it was pretty emotional, that, which of course it's going to be watching your own daughter getting murdered, but it actually felt like I just watched Al Pacino's daughter get murdered right in front of him.
Yeah, and that was one of the best scenes of the movie. Like, personally, I don't think Pacino does a bad job.
No,
I don't think it holds a candle to the other two, but with what he's working with here, I think he does fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's, you know, acting wise, definitely the best part of this movie. You know, like Malachi was saying with the kitchen scene where he talks about they pull me back in, that whole part when, you know, like the lightning is like crashing in the background and he has like a stroke, and, you know, he's kind of playing it up a little bit. It was a little much, but he's still, you know, he's Al Pacino. He's a really enjoyable person to watch on screen. So I liked his performance well enough. I thought it was good. But, you know, not as good as the other two.
You can definitely see, like, how his acting became a little bit more scream-heavy. Because, like, he screams through, like, almost all of the end of Scarface. And like every time he screamed in this movie, it's all I could think of. And I feel like that's probably a testament to how good and memorable Scarface is, because I feel like this, I feel like Scarface overshadows this movie.
One, because it's so more dramatic and easier to follow?
I think it's just because, I mean, well, this movie isn't necessarily one that a lot of people like. Mm. Like Scarface, I feel like, is often critically acclaimed. And people actually talk about that movie in a positive light. Meanwhile, here we are having a roasting session about The Godfather 3. So if that doesn't speak to it just a little bit.
So we talked about Pacino. What do y'all think of the other performances in the movie? Like, we'll get to Sophia in a minute. But what did y'all think of everybody else?
Did they age Diane Keaton? Or does she really look that old? Because I've seen her recently. She doesn't look as old.
Maybe yeah, I thought there was something going on. It's definitely the hair. The hair looks goofy. Yeah, the hair is weird. And then it kind of, I don't know if she got like a nose job or something, or they did her nose up for the movie. But maybe they just had a weird makeup team for this movie, because I know Pacino at the end looks goofy. Like when he is like the last like 30 seconds of the movie, it looks like he has like a thing hanging from his left eye. I know it's supposed to be like, it's kind of droopy, but it just looks strange. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, I agree. It looks kind of strange.
I like how Connie was a bigger role in this. I feel like she was kind of robbed in the first two, especially in the part two. I mean, part two, she was had, you know, with the feud between Michael and, God bless, I'm terrible at names. Help me out here. Michael.
Fredo,
thank you, God. Yeah. That the beat between those two at the end. But I did like her character in this film. Trying to be like, even with the heavy in meetings, not the heavy ones, but, you know, just the ties, she was able to kind of be the middleman, or the kind of squash the beef in between.
Yeah, I think she kind of plays the role of, you know, where Duvall or Tom Hagen would be, where she kind of is always in the room and trying to kind of mediate whatever conflict is going on. But I like what they did with Connie. I like that, you know, that actress is, she's pretty good. It seems kind of like out of character. That's another issue I have with this movie. Like, I don't understand the motivations or what brought these people to where they are now, which is just, you know, that's going to happen with a sequel taking place this many years later.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Connie didn't really exhibit any of that behavior in part two, but maybe in like the, you know, however many years since, she's kind of like moved up in the ranks in the Corleone family. And
it's kind of strange because it seems like Michael started to like temper his emotions. Meanwhile, Connie's out here feeding poisonous desserts to her Don, which I thought was kind of strange in like the last 25 minutes of the movie. Like, she's like keeping an eye on this Don. I think it's a Don Altobello.
Altobello.
And she's just like hawk eyeing this man through like binoculars, I guess you'd say. But I just thought that was kind of strange. Like, she's never been one to be a part of the family's business. Like, in the last movie, she's screaming at Michael to let her marry whatever that guy's name was that plays such a small role. And now she's, like, helping the Corleone family kill people, which I just thought was kind of strange. Another point to add to it being a little bit uncharacteristic.
Yeah, it's weird. Is Altobello the villain?
I could not tell you who is the villain. The only person I can think of that's a villain is
Zaza. Joey Zaza.
And this is like Lucchesi, I think.
Lucchesi, yeah, Don Lucchesi. But I don't know. This movie has so many issues. Like, okay, so why did they pick the meekest man possible to play Don Altobello? Like, he is the least threatening person. He's got that goofy cane. I don't know if this is to like make him seem more relatable or what, but like, he's got the weird cane with like the fist on it. And like, I thought Joey Zaza was going to be the bad guy, but you know, spoiler alert, he kind of gets killed off relatively early. I think it's within like the first, it's definitely within the first half.
It's not even that long after he makes this big statement with killing all the Dons. Like, he dies maybe a matter of like 20 minutes later.
Mm-hmm. Which I know that it's like a revenge thing, but like, God, who's the villain supposed to be? Like, I really don't know. And I don't think this was like a conscious decision. I think it's just bad writing when you have like three different potential villains and then you can't really focus on one and like flesh them out. So they're all just kind of like in the background. And I, especially Altobello, I didn't really like him. I didn't get the point of him even being in the movie. I wish they would have just went with Zaza and kind of like made him an actual villain, because the villains here, I know that there are a lot of them, but none of them hold a candle to, you know, one and twos like at all.
And then I didn't feel as much when that, I, God, I'm terrible with names, when Vincent shot the other gentleman at the end of the film.
Oh, the hitman. I don't think they ever really say his name, but he was like someone who was hired to kill Michael. And I was trying to figure that out. Did he miss the shot and killed Mary? Did he intentionally shoot Mary? Like, I didn't understand that part, because they make a big statement that like they say this guy is really good, and they even show you a scene where like, oh, this guy means business, where he like makes it seem like one of the twins has killed him, and he's just like holding up his dead body, and he cuts the other twin. I was like, oh, this guy means business, and then he misses the shot at the end of the movie? Really? Like, I thought that was really strange.
It's not like a change of motion, too. It's not like she moved in front of him in a quick second, and he shot. It's like, there's plenty of time there.
Yeah, so we've talked about the villains. We talked about a couple of the performances. But we got to talk about Sophia. We have to do it. So what, did y'all hear anything about this whole debacle with her performance before watching the movie?
No.
So it was like a total surprise.
I had only ever heard that it wasn't great when I was reading the Wikipedia page right before watching it. But never in my wildest dream. I mean, like, in the beginning, I was like, oh, it's not that bad. Like, it's kind of strange. Like, it doesn't seem very natural. But as the movie went on, I was like, it's kind of cringy. I was like, I don't know if it's just the way that her character is, like, poorly written. Because she just kind of seems like she's a front. And she's kind of acting like a front the whole time. I don't know. Her character just seemed like someone who's written into the story to try to attain a higher purpose, and there's not much to do with that. So they're like, oh, let's give her like some incest. That'll make her seem interesting, I guess.
I just don't understand why that was in the movie. Like, all okay, at the end of part two, you know, we all kind of predicted what the movie was going to be about, and we all got it wrong. I don't know why this movie is about what it's about. They really picked like the most boring thing. And I don't know why there had to be an incest subplot. I don't know why, you know, Mary was the big like player and not Anthony. And it feels like they're trying to kind of groom Vincent into the new spot. But I don't know. I don't really buy it. I kind of would have just preferred it be Anthony. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But
well, no. It's just the idea of you passing on from son to son. That idea sounds great. But
yeah. I mean, in this movie, in this canon, Vincent is definitely a better pick than Anthony. But Mary and Anthony were both, like, not great characters. Like, if you're... I just really don't like when movies do this, because I know that it's not like a common thing, but releasing sequels, like with Star Wars, where you have to bring in the old characters and then bring in like their kids too. I don't like that. I think it's lazy writing.
It's forced.
It is forced. Yeah. And it just, it, It never serves a purpose. It never like works out in the right way. I just don't like it. I don't want to exaggerate, but that's like one of the worst acting performances I've ever seen in a movie, like ever.
She acts like she's acting in a porno. I'm just going to say it.
She does. I totally agree with you. It's so bad. I don't know if somebody like fed her lines to her or what, but it all feels so robotic. And, you know, you can tell it's the director's daughter. Like, you know, she didn't win or, you know, she didn't get the role by auditioning. She was just kind of like picked out because she was around the right age and she, you know, her dad directed the movie. Winona Ryder was originally supposed to play the part, and I think that would have been
nice.
A whole lot better. I know. And she like showed up on set and was like on the very first day she had like a panic attack or something and couldn't do it. So they just threw Sophia in there.
Just like Sunny, I feel like it would be hard pass to convince me that she was Italian.
Yeah. I know. She's clearly like from California and she's trying so hard to mask the accent and it just does not work. It's like she's slurring all of her words.
So did you guys have any like favorite scenes in the movie? Maybe we can talk about something that's actually good.
I really, really, I'm going to start it off because I've been thinking about this the whole time we're recording. I really enjoyed the scene when Diane Keaton approached Michael for the first time in the scene after the quarrel between Vincent and that guy's name. I'm not going to even try to think of his name. And his hands were highlighted by the light in the room, but his whole body was in the shadow. It was kind of like the conversation they were having about she knew what he did about killing Fredo, or him killing Fredo. And then, like, again, it was like the visualization of his hands, kind of like, I don't know if there's any correlation with that. I know it probably there was some intention in there with that, with his hands being in the light, with his whole body being in the shadow. But I really enjoyed just the visualization of that particular scene.
What about you, Drew?
So I had a couple scenes that I really liked because I do think there is a good movie in here somewhere. I know that the assassins that are sent to kill Vincent are like total boneheads, but if you disregard them, that's kind of a cool scene that sets up that, you know, Vincent is, he's definitely like Sonny's kid. And, you know,
for sure,
he can hold his weight with the Corleones. So I really liked that one. You know, like we were talking about earlier, the kitchen scene. I you know, it's like iconic. That's like the one that people remember from this movie, I think.
Harmless noise.
Like I don't know if it's good acting or not, but like it's really enjoyable to watch. Anytime Al Pacino just like goes off the rails, it's so like goofy and fun. And I mean, granted, it's like he's having a stroke here and he's like screaming out about like Fredo. You know, that part's not super fun, but it's really, and you know, enjoyable to watch. And it's, you know, Pacino's got range. And then I also liked the beginning scene. It doesn't have quite the parallel that the first two have with like the wedding and the scene in Lake Tahoe. It's kind of just like a little get together for Michael's involvement in the Catholic Church, but it's good to, you know, I mean, I know that we watched all of these within like a week's succession, mm-hmm. but it's good to see all the characters again. And I really liked that opening like 15 minutes or so. That was really nice. But yeah, Malachi, what do you think?
My favorite scene, like I liked it so mm-hmm. much that I took a note of it. It's right after Zaza has mm-hmm. all of the Dons killed. There's a scene that has Vincent, Connie, and Al, and they're like in this church, and there's this large depiction of the crucifixion of Jesus, and you can't see anything on like the bottom like two-thirds of the screen, and you just hear Connie, Vincent, and Al talking. They're like, well, we have to do it. This is what we have to kill Zaza. And I think that scene's really, really interesting because you can't see anything. All you're doing is hearing voices. And I just really like the way it was. That was one thing that I really enjoyed. One thing that I didn't really like was, mm-hmm. it happens to be the counterpoint of Cody's, whenever Michael is laying in bed and Kay comes in and talks to him, and she's like, oh, you look, this is the first time I've ever seen you look completely, like, hopeless or whatever she says. I can't remember the quote. I just thought it was weird that they said that Michael had been in a coma. He wakes up. He's startled by Kay saying his name, and he goes, "Ugh." And then moments later, he's speaking in complete full sentences, which I thought was kind of odd.
Yeah, man, it is odd. Yeah, I agree.
Make your mind up.
Let me think. There was another scene that I thought was okay. I think as weird and out of place as the helicopter scene is, I think overall it's filmed really well.
That's fair. Except for the long take showing where that older gentleman got like Swiss cheese.
It's like a scene out of a different movie. Like it's mm-hmm. so over the top, and it goes on for so long.
There's also a lot of really long holds in this movie. Like they put the camera on Mary's face so many times in the movie for so long, and I think that kind of adds to the fact that it seems like she's doing such a bad job, because like she doesn't really seem like she has like the best control of her face whenever she's not speaking. Like she kind of just like bites her lip and she'll like kind of like hang her mouth open, which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah, it's not a, like, I guess we can go ahead and hop into cinematography. Like it's not a bad looking movie at all. It's a little plain, I think, compared to the first two. You know, they brought on the same guy from part one and two, the same cinematographer. It's the same argument you could say with Coppola, where it's like, oh, you know, he directed one and two. The cinematographer that did one and two, you know, he's going to do a good job on this one too. And I don't think he really like half-asses it. I just don't think it's nearly as it doesn't have as many shots that you can just say, wow, like that, you know, that was filmed really well, or that looks really nice. Because everything here kind of has like a weird orange tint on it. Did y'all notice that, or is that just me?
Mm-hmm. Even the poster has an orange tint on it, so very true.
Yeah. I don't know why that choice was made, but you know.
Oh, another scene that I liked was the scene where Michael's giving his confession. Like, I thought the nice like cut between like you only see the priest, and like he's like framed in flowers, and it kind of cuts over and you see Michael and he's framed in flowers, and I thought that was like a really nice like scene. Like it kind of shows Michael being cut off from like his Catholic faith and trying to like get back to that maybe, and then he starts to tell what he's done, and then you hear the bell toll in the background, which I thought was really, that was a nice touch.
I did like the correlation between the opera at the end and then the suspense between what was about to happen or what you thought was about to take place. You know, it was like a build-up without being...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was intentional, of course, but it's like, what's going to happen? At any moment, shit's going to go down. I mean, the movie's about to end. How is it going to end? I mean, or what way is it going to end? And I thought that was a great way to kind of wrap up the film.
Oh, I have another plot question, too. So did Connie know that Michael killed Freda? Because she was like, yeah, she was like, it was a terrible drowning accident. But so she didn't know.
She's got it, though.
But Vincent knew, and he knowingly lied about it to Mary. How did Connie not know? I just thought that was really strange, too.
Maybe she denied it.
Maybe, but I thought that part was like really out of place. I was like, so does she know? I was like, she got Anthony off the boat whenever whoever that was, and Fredo went out on the boat and he was shot in the back of the head. I was like, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that she knows, considering she's playing like the Hagen role in this movie, but
she's killing the other Don. You would think they're like, oh, she has
to know. But I don't know. I really, really can't say.
But overall, it's almost in the opposite spectrum of things when you go into a movie with high expectations and they're completely shattered. I feel like when I went with lower expectations, I felt like I found some qualities that I did enjoy. So I don't know. I don't know what my expectations were possibly going to be, but I'm going to say in general
I didn't hate it. I wouldn't watch it again, but I didn't hate it thoroughly. There were some redeeming qualities throughout the film that made it enjoyable to watch for at least one time. As far as rewatch value, it's not there for me.
So was it worth like avoiding for all these years, do you think?
Yes, rightfully so. I mean, because now I have this expanded universe of what happened, but now it's, and that's shattered too.
I mean, I think the movie feels disjointed from the other two enough to where you could still say that you really like The Godfather 1 and 2 and not even have to bring up 3.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those things where, like, people that know, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, we don't talk about 3.
Yeah, but the same idea is, like, you could talk about the original Star Wars. Again, I bring this up, like, I haven't passed, but if you watched, maybe you were a fan of the original 3, and then you watched the prequels, and then you hated those, and then time had gone by, and like, oh, you're a fan of the prequels, and then you watched the new trilogy, and you're like, God, I hate those. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, sometimes with time, it has a way of maturing thing, but I don't know. I don't think it holds up. And I feel like if I hold that in my conscience now, thinking, okay, as a collective, not as a, okay, this is what that was, but we're going to ignore that.
What would you give it as a trilogy?
As a trilogy, I'd give it a 7.5 out of 10.
That means the 1 and the 2 are carrying those bad boys heavy.
Oh yeah, for sure. I wanted to give it 8, but then I was like, nah, 3 pulled it down pretty far.
What about you, Drew? Any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I don't completely dislike this movie. I watched it with some other people, and you know, we kind of laughed at it and had a good time. And you know, roasting the movie, you know, makes any movie easier to watch. And especially with this, if you don't take it so seriously and you kind of recognize that it's not, it is canon, but it's kind of not, like, a lot of people don't talk about 3. And if you go into it with those kind of expectations, it's not like an awful movie, but I wouldn't say it's good. I'm just going to talk about this for a second, but I love this bit of trivia where it's like Roger Ebert, like, famously kind of didn't love Godfather Part 2 upon first watch. And he wrote about it and said it was too long and too convoluted and, you know, all the criticisms that you could talk about too. And then by the time 3 rolled around, you know, he didn't want to be on the wrong side of history. So he rated it like too high. And a lot of critics did that. And that's why the movie had such a positive reception upon release in like 1990. And then over time, it's kind of, you know, shown its true colors and people aren't nearly as, you know, into it as they were 30 years ago. But I just thought that was funny where, you know, but it's a fine movie. I think it's like 6 out of 10. Yeah, it's definitely watchable, but.
What about the trilogy?
The trilogy, God, I really want to rate it higher than where it actually is, just because I want to revisit 2 with like everything in mind and all the context, and now that I know what happens. But as a trilogy, I think I would rate it probably a 7. I think that's fair. Yeah.
Okay. I think this movie has some redeemable qualities. Like, I think as much as it's hated, it's still like it's still a Godfather movie in a way. Like, it's not all the way bad. Like, it's kind of rough in spots, but it's not all the way bad. Like, I think I gave it a 2.5 out of 5, and I gave Part 2 a 3.5 out of 5. And I felt like 2 was, like, really hard to follow, but I think it fits in better with 1 than 3 fits in with both 1 and 2. So I would say that while 3 is probably my least favorite, I think that kind of goes without saying, I think it's okay. Like, I get it. It was like, I would really like the money. Hard to say no to free money whenever, you know, you can just very lazily throw something together and come out on top with a little bit more money in your pocket. I guess I can't hate that too much. It makes me laugh because one of the reviews on Letterboxd says it's like watching Leonardo da Vinci piss all over Mona Lisa, which I think is a wild quote. I don't think it goes that far as being that bad, but I mean, it's definitely one of those that you'll kind of like turn a blind eye to whenever you speak about The Godfather. So as a trilogy, I'll give it, I think one carries a heavy weight, two carries like a decent amount, while three just kind of lags it behind. But I'll give it a 7. I think a 7's about where it belongs.
Agree.
As a trilogy.
One thing I can say about 2, you know, I, like we touched on with the last episode, you know, it's hard to follow, yada, yada, yada. But like, it's at least ambitious. And you know, you can tell mm-hmm. that, you know, it's a smart move. Like, there's a lot of gears in there. And I mean, it is hard to follow, but upon rewatches, I think you pick up on more stuff. Part 3, it's all kind of laid out in front of you, and none of it's all that interesting, which is just kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah, it kind of takes away the mystery of what the meaning of the movie really is, because it kind of shows it all to you.
Yeah, it's
all that. I think, like, as with most sequels, like, the whole purpose of a sequel is to go bigger and better, and I think they went too big, and I think it kind of, like...
Should have went home.
I think they should have like tapered it down. Like, I don't really feel like this is it's not a good ending, I would say. Like, it seems like they were like, oh, we might make another one and maybe we'll answer a little bit more questions. But I mean, like, I could very easily like feel like Vincent could have like there could have been like another Godfather movie where it follows Vincent, since they let Michael die such a pauper's death. He was sitting in a chair. He drops an orange.
God.
He falls to the ground.
We didn't even get into all the orange bits in this movie.
They're everywhere.
Oh my God. They're really everywhere. I keep getting pulled back in. I keep wanting to talk about that. The oranges in this movie, whatever subtlety the first two have with the oranges is like thrown out the window. They are everywhere in this movie. And like, Coppola wants you to know that, you know, that means somebody's gonna die. Because it feels like every 20 minutes there's a huge orange on screen. Like, it's just a big red. I don't know. It just irks me. But anyway, that's my little tangent about the oranges over. Yeah, so I guess we've wrapped up the Godfather trilogy.
Hey! That was the most prestigious conversation I've ever had with myself. Let me just tell you, there were several names I've forgotten. There are several times where my mind was wandering. So for everyone who's listening, no, I have some knowledge of film. But when it came to this film, my mind went scatterbrain. So I apologize for any pretentious thought. It went out there and had no structural value. And you don't even know half of it. Like, most of the conversation I just had was... So... Forgive me. I'll do better next week when we're doing a Disney Channel movie.
Hey! I'm going to put some air horns in here. Cat's out of the bag. We're doing a Disney Channel movie for episode 9. What will it be? We don't know yet. We're going to figure it out and probably hold a little poll on Instagram. But I think we're all pretty excited to do something that is not a draining 3-hour crime drama each week. So I think it'll be fun to kind of let loose and do something a little more relaxing than talking about these behemoths each week.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch Heat.
Oh my God. Heat is so good. Heat is awesome. I think you'll really like Heat. Are you watching it soon?
No, I was just saying, you just set up 3-hour long movie, and that's a 3-hour long, very dramatic movie.
It is. It definitely is. It's so good. It's so much better than part 3. I think that also came out in 1990. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. Next week we're going to be talking about some Disney Channel movie. We don't know what it's going to be, but you know,
if you have any ideas, send them to us.
Yeah, for sure. We, you know, we love to hear from you guys. Follow us at, you know, at Command Cinema. We're only on Instagram for right now, but we will probably expand in the future. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, it's been good talking to you guys about these movies. It's been fun.
Of course, I enjoyed it. I'm so glad we made Cody watch this movie, even if he did hate it.
I know. I feel like we got a lot of lukewarm takes on this movie. I think it's pretty canon to not like it. I mean, I think that's a.
It's easy. It's like easy to be a bully with this movie.
Yeah, but yeah. So you sure? Yeah. See you guys next week.
My name's Cody, and you're watching Disney Channel.